Hi, I'm Becky Ward from Scotland and Western Wildcats, and you're listening to the Half Court Press podcast.
Hi, I'm Neil Braid from the Gallatown Bowling Club, and you're listening to the Half Court Press podcast.
This is Kayleigh Dunn of FA Jumpires, and you are listening to the Half Court Press podcast.
Coach's Corner is the latest series from the Half Court Press podcast. Here, Teo McLeod chats to a variety of coaches from different sports about what it is they do. We chat about coaching philosophies and techniques, youth development and team preparation, as well as how the individual fits into these concepts. If you're curious about coaching, then this is the podcast for you.
Hi there, I'm Kaz Cuthbert, a former international hockey player for Scotland, and I am the player coach at Western Wildcats and head of high performance at Bowls Scotland.
Hello and welcome back to our coaching specials. You've joined us for our brand new series with the Half Court Press podcast. We've got a regular guest on the show, a friend of the podcast, Karina Kaz Cuthbert of Scottish Hockey, former captain of Scottish Hockey and coach of Western Wildcats, and now of Scotland Bowls.
Hello, thank you for having me again.
How's life? How's it going?
Life's good. Life is busy. Life is very busy at the moment. We're obviously in the thick of the hockey season, just started a new job, like you touched on, and then obviously I've got a family now as well, which is growing, and they're needing a lot of attention.
So you are within the Scottish hockey community, or British hockey community. You are probably more well-known for being the captain of Scotland, former vice president, wasn't it, of Scottish Hockey?
Yeah.
And was it a league winning coach with Western Wildcats ladies?
That's right.
For more information on that, go back to some of our previous episodes with Karina. But yeah, can you tell us a bit more? Can you tell us a bit more, please, about your new job?
So I recently started a new job with Bowls Scotland. So that's Lawn Bowls, as head of high performance. So what that means is essentially, because I'm not a bowler in any way, I don't profess to be, but I'm utilising the skills that I've picked up and all the experience from my hockey career to be able to go into a new sport. And essentially my job is to set up and make sure there's sustainable pathways for our players to develop and become elite performers alongside our coaches as well. So everything that I've lived and breathed for 15 to 20 years, and I get to go and help implement that sort of pathway for the bowlers out there in Scotland.
So how hands-on are you? Is it about creating coaching courses? Is it about running sessions and helping people plan? What's the practical day-to-day?
What do I do? So I'm actually very much that next higher level, and that I don't so much do the devising of the detail, but I devise the overall plan. So, as I said, so in ensuring that there's a real clear pathway for bowlers out there to know how they can come into a Scotland setup, how are they supported within that setup, how our coaches then deliver that support, well, not just our coaches, but the whole environment around that. So it's my job to have that overall vision and then use the staff that work under me to then implement the details of that. So I have coaching volunteer managers, so he will develop the coaching courses specific to drive that performance element. I have head coaches of the women's men's Paris team, and they will help deliver then that program. So yeah, I sit and have that overall picture, and then I use the staff that we've got to help drive that forward.
And you previously coached hockey at Western Wildcats, haven't you?
Still there.
How's that going?
It's going really well. So we are undefeated so far this league. I think we've played 5-5 now. And we have a really strong team this year because we've maintained players from last year. So club hockey is difficult because sometimes you have a high turnover of players each season, so you kind of have to start again from the beginning with the basics and the principles. But because we didn't lose really any players from last year to this year, our squad have grafted over the summer together. So they're really tight, and now we are absolutely flying, and you watch, we'll be winning the league this year.
Now, you've previously won the Scottish Hockey League, I believe, haven't you?
Well, we were the playoff, so we were national champions in 2019. That was the first time we've ever achieved that as Western Wildcats ladies team.
And how's it been going since then? Have you?
Well, we regularly sit top four, so we regularly make playoffs. It was the COVID standard, good two or three seasons in between there. So last year we finished third in the league, which is the highest I think we finished. And then we lost out in playoffs. So this year we're looking to go who better and just decide to win it instead of relying on playoffs.
You've got form. You've got previous form.
Yeah, yeah. We're up there. We're consistent now. We're consistently competing at the top, which is great.
That's always the sign of a healthy league, I find, isn't it? If you can find a group of teams, more than two, I mean, want about three, four, five teams to be regularly challenging each other.
Yeah, this is definitely coming along. Women's champ. I think sometimes it can differ between the men's and women's leagues. Our women's league in particular, we have changed our format. So we split into top six over the last year or two now. And definitely the top six in the women's league are competitive. They're definitely competitive. So it's good to see that. So it's been developing over the last sort of decade, just trying to split that strength down the league rather than have it, you say, stacked at the top.
How long have you been coaching? What got you into coaching?
You fall into it once you're when you're a player. This is my 10th season at Wildcats, I think, or 9th or 10th season at Wildcats. And I previously came to Wildcats from Giffnock. And Giffnock, I was coached by Rona Simpson, who was an Olympian Scottish player, outstanding individual and role model. And I learned pretty much everything she taught. And then she stepped away from club hockey and was put in a position where I could be Giffnock. At that point, I was probably too young, too inexperienced, not really grasping, understanding what that entailed. And I really struggled. Then I moved across to Wildcats, where they had just a better support system around about me. So I was supported by just committee and club to help run all the external stuff that you don't realise that might land on your lap as a coach. And it allowed me just to focus purely on the coach piece on the pitch. And so that was, that was, 10, 11 years ago now, and I haven't looked back. It's one of those ones, I have my level two coaching award, but again, I'll be honest, I had to do it because it was a bit of a tick box exercise. They're wanting all the coaches in Premier League to have that coaching qualification, which I think is a good aspiration. I don't discourage that, because there is a lot of things that I probably didn't know. Again, it helped me think about that whole package as a coach. So I very much coach what I know. As a player, I just impart that knowledge that I've had and experience onto my team. However, there are other elements of coaching that you need to be aware of, like health and safety, environment, and, you know, having balls smash around all over the place. So probably the detailing was really good to be setting my coaching qualifications and learning that the basics of coaching, which I didn't have or didn't do. So it was good. It was good to do. And that's where I am now. So I'm still coaching Wildcats and still enjoying it. And I've got a new assistant coach who came in last year, Adam McInnes, and that's been really kind of uplifting, just again have a different input and somebody challenging, you know, making you think and challenge your decisions all the time, and having that person to soundboard off. And it's again just a different voice for the girls, which is good for them to give them another spark, another boost to keep going. So yeah.
You're putting yourself in line to be the next Scottish Ladies head coach?
No, not at all. Not at all. Coaching something's out. Like I said, I fell into it. It's not something that I have specifically chosen as a career. I've always had my dual career alongside hockey. To be the coach of the women's national team or any national team, I feel that it takes its toll. I think it's a really challenging, difficult, and at times really horrible position to be, because having been there as a player, let's take, for example, the Commonwealth game here, which is the, you know, the pinnacle of what you can play at as a Scotland player, to be representing Scotland, to be that coach that makes the decision as to who goes and who doesn't go, it's heartbreaking as a player. And if you're a good coach, you know your team, you know your players, you have a relationship with them, you're going to break hearts. And I just think that's a really difficult piece for a coach that people don't realise. Like, it's dead easy once you've not been selected to blame the coach, and you know they'll get called all sorts of names. But it's horrendous for coaches to be in that position. Actually break people's hearts knowing how much everybody's given to be there. Ultimately a decision has to be made, and that's what the coach job is. Whereas at club level, I find it hard enough to even pick a team for a Saturday, you know, and I very much have an open relationship with all the girls in my squad because I like to explain all my decision making so that it's not out of the blue, you know, it doesn't, people don't get sideswiped by decisions. But I still find that hard. And if I find it hard picking club team, you know, for a Saturday, I can't imagine what it's like having spent, you know, probably double or three times the amount of time that I spend with my club players, with national players, to then have to make those decisions. I think it would be really, really tough. So it's not something I aspire to be. I'm quite happy. I love my club. I love the girls there. I love the environment. It's a nice, safe, supportive community environment. Don't want to probably be at that next level up. Encourage anyone, though, crack on if you're keen.
The Half Court Press is on social media. Feel free to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. This leads us nicely into our next section. What do you see as your role as a hockey coach? What are the important qualities of a coach? How does this compare to your other role as head of high performance at Scottish Bowls?
So it all like cross interconnects, you know, there's so much that you can take from coaching, because so a coach is a leader. A coach is the leader of that team. And to get the best out of your team, you have to have relationships. So you have to know your team inside out if you want the real best out of them. You can be a distance coach where you just dictate and help, and you will get results to a certain level if you're that kind of coach. I'd say probably that's maybe where I started, because it's a journey of learning. But very much it was this is how we should play, go out and do it, you know, that. And you would dictate to the team how you saw them being able to play. Whereas as I've developed and I understand now my team and the people that I'm working with, it's actually a really good coach and play to everybody's strengths. So building a team might not be the team of, you know, most outstanding technically gifted players, but understanding that I might have one technically gifted player, but I've got three support players around them who will do all the unselfish leading, create the space, and be there to mop up, you know, second phase or defensively. It's very much that relationship piece is probably what takes you to the next level of being a coach. And then into my new job, I have to try and essentially tell people I want this to happen. But in order for it to happen, they need to buy into what I'm saying. So I have to have relationships with my staff team, with, like, say, my coaching team, and with the players who are going to be on that pathway and that journey. And if they don't buy into me and I don't have relationships with them, then they're not going to jump on. And if you don't jump on board the ship's not going to get very fast. So coaching skills, you're a leader and you have to own that position. Sometimes lonely, because you have to make decisions, like I said earlier, that are quite harsh. But you also, the more you can have a relationship with your players, your, like I say, my work, your staff team, the more they'll buy into the vision, the goal, the route that you're going. So that's how I translate that across into what I do day to day.
We've begun to touch on this, but what are the important philosophies, the principles to put across in hockey, in bowls? Are they the same principles, or are they slightly different?
No, they're very much the same, but again, I see words like principles and stuff like that. I find everyone uses different language. I do find that. See, when you work in sport and the higher levels you get in sport, they just use a different language, but it all means the same thing. And I'm a simpleton, so I'm going to come back down to simple language. If you're the leader and you have a goal or a vision as to where you see things going, that is the most important piece, because then the detail has to fall from that. So in a governing body, so I now work at Bowl Scotland, it'll be a strategy. They'll call it a strategy and you have to put all the pieces in. It's still a goal and it's still a vision. And so club, we want to win the league, right? There's the goal, there's the vision. You can picture everybody busting their ass, winning games, lifting the trophy. That's the vision. Then what you have to then do, though, as a coach, is the detail underneath that. So then you talk about principles. That principles to me is just a, right, what are the key areas to help us achieve that goal? So in work, right, the vision is to have this clear pathway that produces elite performers continuously. Gold medals, gold medals, gold medals. Okay, well, the principles then is we need to have a really effective coaching group that are going to drive these players. We have to have a really supportive environment that'll help enhance these players into the best they can be. And then we have to give everybody opportunities. So we have to then provide them with competitive opportunities, training opportunities, all the things that are going to make them best. Club hockey, want to win the league, right? What does that look like then? We have to be really sharp as attackers, we have to be really solid with defenders, and we have to be really cohesive as a team. So there's your principles. But that's just the how are we going to get there. And then you have to go the next tier down. And what does that now look like on a hockey pitch? Right, we're going to be the most solid in defence. So what are our go-to defensive principles? Is it that we are going to be really aggressive when with the ball turned over? Is it that we are going to protect the middle? These words that are generally thrown out there from coaches. So protect the middle, aggressive on the turnover, double teaming. Like you can then start to hone in on what actually then makes a solid defence to help us win the league. So it's that sort of triangle tier all the time. And as a coach, you have to know that triangle so that you can then embed that into who you're working with. But see that tier down, the kind of bottom one about the now real operative details. So like my team, we're gonna be solid in defense. I think where I got stuck as a coach was I would just stick to the same. Oh, well, we'll just do right. It's right. We're going to protect the middle because that's a what's our defensive principle at the middle, and we do that every year. But what does that mean? Like, what are my team actually doing? Like, do they know what that means? And actually, when you watch video, they don't know what it would mean because nobody at times channel the ball wider. So actually, I learned to actually again know my team, know their strengths, and change that principle to something different, something that they can actually relate to, engage their brains when they're playing and in the heat of the moment. And so our buzzwords in defence now are aggressive on the turnover. So they know the minute, because I've got quite a ferocious team that just want the ball, and they'll chase the ball. And so when I'm saying protect the middle, they're following the ball all over the shot, and I'm like, there's no structure, So actually, knowing my team going, right, well, that's no good. Like, it's not what I see as a vision, but it's not. There's no point me driving something that I see, but they're not seeing the same vision. So change the principle this year to go and get the ball. Like, we turn, go and get it. And then they all chase the ball and we go and get the ball. So it's being adaptable. You've got to be adaptable to these principles all the time, but you've got to have that triangled approach of what's the goal? How are we going to get there? Detailing. What does that then mean? And as I said, it fits all walkways of life, whatever you're up to. Yeah, same thing if you want to achieve.
This starts to tie into my next question of what are the processes of coaching a group or a team, I suppose a group of coaches in your high performance role or a team in your hockey role. compared to an individual. One of your roles is an invasion sport with a group of players, a team. The other role is very much an individual sport, isn't it?
Yeah, that's again the hard one. But again, it comes down to actually spending time knowing each individual, because, you know, the good old phrase, your team's only as strong as your weakest player. And if you identify someone within your team as a weakness, then actually that's on you as the leader, because if that person is a weakness, have you engaged with them properly to make them a strength in the team? And I think sometimes that's a hard one, because when you're dealing with so many people, so within a team, you could have a squad of 20, so you're trying to understand all the time. How do you keep pulling everyone up rather than sort of dragging down to more of a basic level? And it's that is where having those conversations, maybe with the people who you don't have the best rapport with, you maybe don't have the strongest relationship with, they're actually the ones that you should probably be investing in more and engaging in more to make sure your team is strong. So a team is full of individuals. And as I kind of touched on, you have to know your individuals to make sure your team is really cohesive and strong. And also, I went on a mentoring workshop thing that was really interesting. And they talked, we did this piece on values. And it really highlighted some of my flaws in how I interact with people, because I'll have values that are really important to me. So things like timekeeping, like be on time, and work rate, right? That's two that are just, it's just how I live by. You know, I'm like very organized, trying to get as much done as I can, you know, a certain time. So I'm therefore sharp with my timekeeping, and I work my ass off. Whatever task is given to me, I work my ass off. So I then, if I see people being really good at those types of things, I value them higher because I like them. And if I see people abusing them, so say they're late regularly and they're talking during a session when I think they should be listening and engaging, you know, type thing, I straight away put them in the pocket of don't like them. Like, not, and it's a subconscious thing, it's all to do with values. And so actually though, some of these people that are a bit lapsadaisical and chilled and really horizontal, who drive me insane, you need these people because they bring a level of calm and a level of composure and a level that's just different to what, you know, if we had 18 Karinas in the team, they'd all be wired to the moon giving it, you know, whereas actually you have to have diversity. You have to have a diverse group of people to be really successful. So, and this workshop, it made us think about what we really value, and actually to stop being so judgmental, you know, judging folk because they wouldn't either do the same things that you would do or make the same decisions that you would make. But actually, diversity makes you really strong. So I found that really quite interesting when you're working with different individuals, is not to pigeonhole people and go, oh, I like them, I can deal with them, they're my kind of people. And then actually just embrace differences in the different people and learn more myself how to manage my feelings and my subconscious feelings about them. So, but that comes back to that, your question. So individuals, teams, team is just full of individuals, and you need to know how to pull all them together. And if you can do that, the team will be really strong.
How have you found going from a sport which is matchday squads of 16 to 18, broader squads of 25 to 30, as in it is in hockey, to lawn bowls, which is a bit more of an individual sport?
So it's been really interesting actually jumping across the different sport, because so I was at the World Championships recently with our bowlers. So we had a squad of 5 men, 5 women, and 6 para bowlers, and two directors with the para bowlers. And what's interesting was I came into an environment where, like what you're saying, kind of everybody just did their own thing, and they were in really separate teams, separate units. And I obviously found that quite unusual because I was like, you're all wearing the Scotland shirt, we're all going together, we're all doing squad days together. There was very little integration. And so I think what I will be bringing across to Bowls is actually that element of strength in a team and understanding that you guys are all part of the same team. You're all wearing that same Scotland shirt. You're all out on the green together. You need to enhance that support team that you've got round about you. And we took it to the World Championships, and there was elements of actually people really engaged. And I didn't do much. I just tried to filter little things. But it's finding the fine line of then actually there is that individual piece that they need to be honing in on themselves, concentrating and focusing on what they need to do. So for me, it's going to be quite a learning experience to figure out how to maximise that team environment in Bowls, but also have that awareness that there needs to be the individual element too. So the way Bowls works, though, is mostly they play, there's a team of five, so you are a singles or a fours, and then you're a doubles or a triples. So they all have to, at some point, play with other people. So it'll be quite interesting to try and pull that together a little bit more.
How do you improve as a coach?
How do you improve? You make mistakes. It's as simple as that. Nobody wants to. Nobody likes it. The more you can get comfortable with getting things wrong, the more brave you'll be in your decision making, and the more brave then your team will be. So you're not going to learn anything if you, I'm not saying like you experiment, but you have to get to a point where you have to self-reflect all the time and go, like, did I do what I could have done there? Was that the best option? And I think that helps having, again, that support system. I've definitely found having an assistant coach like this year and last year so much better, because I can actually verbalise some of that reflection of, do you think we should have, do you think we could have, you know, and having those conversations all the time are really critical to then helping you reason your decision making. And it might be that you actually don't change anything, but just to verbalise it and to think about it helps you learn. I find I'm a visual learner slash I learn from talking to other people. I'm not going to learn from sitting reading books or watching too much seminary type stuff. You need to engage me. So I spend a lot of time chatting to people just about hockey or chatting about Bowls. I find I learn a lot from other people, because the one thing I will say is I never have all the answers, but I probably know someone who does. So I'll go and find that information from elsewhere. So if you're trying to develop your learning, just talk to as many people as possible is what I would say. And as I said, you don't learn unless you make some mistakes. So own it.
Also, you might want to listen to a coaching podcast.
You could listen to a coaching podcast. See, and I feel bad because I am not a podcast listener, but my husband loves podcasts. So I know there's a lot of people out there who absolutely love to listen to folk ramble on like me.
The Half Court Press is a multi-sport media outlet. You can check out our articles, opinion pieces, and PDF magazines on our website, www.halfcourtpressmagazine.com. Moving on to the next section, the development of a team. How do you prepare a team?
There's loads of different elements that come into preparation. A bit of a difficult question, really, because you're preparing a team. So again, as I said, you've got to have your vision. You've got to have your goals, first of all. And then once you've got your goals, then you need to start laying down, right, what are the details that are going to actually help us achieve that? And you can normally break it down in hockey terms to your sort of critical elements. So fitness, tactical, technical, yeah, and then it's mental. It depends what level you're at. So if you're going into elite level, then there's more critical elements than just those three. I would say if you're a club level and below, if you can get that sort of tactical, technical, fitness elements right, then you can achieve big things. And once you've got a really good base of that, then you can start to look into that sort of mental, psychological approach in the game. I think that comes if you've got cohesive units, if you're actually working really hard fitness-wise together, that they're actually tactically sound and that they know where everybody's working off each other, then actually then that mental prep side of stuff, you're visualising already what's happening because you're really well connected. Then it just comes down to that individual piece of mentality preparation for each game. And obviously the higher the stakes, the higher that level of preparation needs to be. But again, you keep the unit, if one person's struggling or two, normally that team can help support them and pull them back in. So that's how the preparation comes down to, yeah, making sure that they've ticked the box of those elements and they know what they're doing. But I also think, you know, see when you talk about preparation, for me, they've got to enjoy it. They've actually got to be enjoying what they're doing. And if they're not and seeing it as laboursome and a chore, which it can be at times, then that'll reflect often in performance. So
is there a difference between preparing your team in the short term to preparing your team for the long term regarding competition? So I suppose if you've got a game at a weekend, which is against a different standard of opposition compared to long-term goals, is there more than one thought in your head?
Yeah, so I've probably learned from this for being too short-term minded. As I said, the mindset of our team this year has been really different in that they wanted to invest a lot of their summer time into preparing for the long-term goal, which is to win the league. We've probably never done that as intense as we have this year. And I can now, as a coach, I'm reaping the benefits of that in that previous seasons, because your build-up hasn't been, it's not been so long, it's been tight, that then you go from 1 week to the next going, right, well, we've got a critical game this weekend, let's quickly run through some tactical, technical stuff that might be relevant to this Saturday. And then the next Saturday, you get to a different team and it's, so you're kind of chopping and changing a little bit. And I think that consistency then, because it's not there, and you're chopping and changing, we never actually get to grips of our identity and what we're wanting to do. Whereas because we've had a really good run in this year, our team are so tight that they know what we are doing, what our game plan is, that then I actually don't need to tweak that much for each Saturday, because our game plan outplays a lot of what people are going to throw at us anyway. So it's been quite nice not to have to do that short term. It's like, it's very bitty for then players to kind of keep up. Whereas looking at the long term goal this year, it's a long season, but we're already up to speed that actually we can then just power on through the season, only doing minimal tweaks rather than more major tweaks on a weekly basis. So it's been quite good.
So it sounds like we're given a definition between different terms here, like long-term outcomes is a system and identity for the team, a way of playing or behaving or acting, whereas short-term is the adaptations could be tactics, which is different from a system.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. You have to build that identity piece and know yourselves before you can then. It just makes it then easier, because those adaptations are then really small and much more manageable for people on different skill levels of hockey to then be able to interpret. So yeah, it's been good.
How do you create a positive culture? How do you create a winning environment?
As I said, if you're not having fun, why are you doing it? And club hockey, that really resonates, because people invest a hell of a lot of time into what is essentially a hobby for a lot of people. Like, don't get me wrong, there is a small percentage who are playing at that elite level who are involved in club hockey, but they're a small percentage compared to the amount of people who are playing hockey. So you have to respect the fact that the majority of your team are doing this for the love of it. And if you don't make that an environment that they're going to have fun in and enjoy, want to turn up when it's chucking it with rain, snowing, hailing, then very quickly you're going to lose that positive environment that creates a winning attitude. So little things, I think what I found helps. Taking leadership, like taking people within that group to help lead different elements. So again, understanding that actually sometimes playing stupid games to warm up might not be what I need in my old age for a warm up. Actually, it just freshens up the mind and it's what some others enjoy. So actually just giving people different responsibilities. So there's very much that positivity and that winning environment and mentality can't solely come from me. It has to come from the whole team. Because if I'm just, come on, guys, then they're not invested. They're not buying in if one person's telling you this is how you should behave or be acting and that's what winning looks like. Because as I said, I am very different to a lot of different people in my team. So having that leadership group that's quite diverse, but not just a leadership group, actually, I just randomly will pick people to give them that responsibility of, right, you're in charge of a warm-up drill today. You know, what's your favourite drill? Crack on. Because, again, just making sure that they feel invested, feel valued, because they can come up with a five-minute drill, something that they like, so they get to pick, you know, something that they want to do rather than the same old stodgy drills that I've been giving them. And then make it competitive, I would say, is the other thing. If you want to drive winning and positivity, now there's a fine line here, but competitive often sometimes can result in angry people. But at the end of the day, we all want to win. Like if you're playing sport and if you're playing at the level that I'm coaching at, then they very much want to win. So if you can make everything competitive, you know, from simple drills to games work all the time, then it drives that energy and that winning mentality all the time and that competitive environment. So spread the load, share some of the, you know, share some of the value around the team about what they find fun and make everything competitive, I would say is probably the key. Hi there, I'm Kaz Cuthbert, a former international hockey player for Scotland, and I am the player coach at Western Wildcats and head of high performance at Bowls Scotland.
This might feed into the next question of what happens if somebody or a small group within the team challenges the culture? How do you cater for the specific or the individual?
I think you have to know why. So the first question always has to be, well, why? Why are you challenging? And do you mean in a negative way or in a positive way?
Either, both, all of it. I mean, if you've got any examples, I mean, don't expect you to name names, but you know.
Yeah, because I think, so obviously Becky Ward is our captain and close friend of mine at Wildcats. And I would say that she, again, has a very different brain to mine. She has a very different mindset on hockey that I have, which is at times I find it really difficult, but it's great because it's great to have two different opinions and views on how things run. And I would say that Wardy is probably one of the best at driving like a positive culture at times, like as in there might just be stages where maybe I'm focusing on something else or I haven't picked up on, you know, a grumbling, but she has because she's very much in the thick of it, that she will then challenge that positive culture. I don't know if I'm explaining that really well. So, for example, let's talk about the competitive stuff. So, doing a lot of gameplay recently, but people are, season now, people are getting tired, a bit grumbly. And if, as coach and Adam, if we're not umpiring it or sticking to the rules, people start to get awful grumpy with each other. Now, that's something I'm a bit like, get on with it. You know, just get on with it. And Adam's quite similar. But Wardy's very quick to actually go, no, actually, you're going to create a negative environment there if we don't actually buck up on our clarity in the rules and umpiring of it. And it's because everyone's so competitive that they don't want to feel done or cheated out of training game. And so it's that, I think that's really great that Wardy has that, just that overview and mindset of, no, these details matter. Whereas that's something I would just be like, stop complaining, you know. But actually, she recognises it very early days that it needs to be dealt with. So to make sure that's a positive culture that's been driven. So she'll be the first to challenge myself and Adam to make sure that we are continually driving that positive engagement at training. So, but again, that's how do you create that? Yeah, you have a friend that you've had for 15 years as you didn't know. It has to be an environment where people feel safe that they can challenge what you're doing, because as I said, you won't always have all the right answers, and you need to empower your team to be able to ask questions, whether it's criticize the culture piece or whether it's to actually drive it further forward more positively if they feel you're maybe slacking off on that.
Is that former Scotland international and captain Becky Ward?
Not a bad captain to have for your club team.
Bad captain. Didn't she succeed you, I think, as captain?
Hey, then she cracked on for another year. And she's been here for 6 years. I think she's in her sixth season with us. Yeah, so she's been there for a while.
I suppose it's quite good in a... It says something about a positive culture where we can have, as a coach, you put in somebody who you trust in a position of authority and asking them to challenge you.
Yeah. And I think leadership's really important. And captaincy for me is quite a difficult one. Everyone has different opinions. Some people might just think, you know, they're there to wear an armband and toss the coin or whatever. I think leaders within your team, they need to be valued, and they are critical to a team functioning properly, because as a coach, you can only influence so much that once the players are on the pitch, you need to be pretty confident that you have leaders on that pitch that are going to drive all these principles, all this vision forward when you're in the trenches. And so when things are rosy and things are fine, then, you know, it's great and everyone's just, you know, playing hockey. But it's when you're in the shit. I like to swear on your podcast, sorry. It's when you're, you know, you lose an early goal, you're 3-0 down in the most important game of the season. If you're a coach on the sideline, there is only so much influence you can have. You need to have people on that pitch who are going to stand up, be counted, and drive pockets of players along with them. And so, as I said, I'm very fortunate. I have Becky Ward, I have Kate Holmes, I have Lucy Finlay. We have a really solid leadership group that's really diverse. But even underneath that, though, because I've known these girls for so long, I have so many other players that I can turn to and ask of them to step up to a new level or take players with them, and they will do that. And that's that open communication piece of actually knowing who can you go to and turn to when you're in the trenches and actually need to be dug out. And it's sometimes often, I've got some brilliant club players, and again, sometimes your internationalists, they miss the importance of knowing their team and having that skill to drag people up. And that actually I often find some club players are more people, so they're personable, and that they can read people, and they'll be the first you'll see with an arm around someone who needs an arm around them, or they'll be the first to be given it, come on, up your game here. And that's what I love to see, is actually just everybody flourish in those leadership roles, even though they're not necessarily given a title. So creating leaders is really important.
The Half Court Press is on social media. Feel free to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. As we begin to wind up, who are your favourite coaches of all time?
Oh, it's a really difficult one. Do you know that's funny? Because see, as a player, like you, I aspired to be other players, and I aspired to be, not necessarily, you aspire to have the traits of, world-class athletes, not necessarily hockey players. I think I'm still deluding myself that I'm a coach. I just still played out the fact that I'm a coach, and I just see myself as a player imparting knowledge. So I suppose I've never really aspired to be any specific coach individually. I think, again, what I've done is from all the coaches that I've worked with as a player and some of the coaches that I've witnessed, for me, it was just about stealing from them their best attributes and adding to my toolbox, but also understanding some people's worst attributes to coaching and learning from that, and not and being wary of that and not bringing that into my practice. So, like Gordon Shepherd, he is extremely passionate, and that passion really drove our Scotland team. And he was the first person I worked under who actually, back in the day, used the whole squad. So, remember the good old days where you would get in a call up with the first team and you'd sit on the bench for 69 minutes and you'd get on for 1 minute at the end and you were grateful for your 1 minute. He really innovated that concept. And when I broke through into the Scotland squad, it was squad. And like you say, you were only as strong as your weakest player, because that was when the rolling subs, we really maximised it and everybody played. And I think like, these are some of the best I took from Sheppy, was that passion, but also just that confidence he put in his whole squad. You're not going to sit there and be a bench warmer and sub, the better player in the team. You are part of that team. And I think that is really valuable, to actually value every member of your squad. And I use that a lot at club hockey. So I learned that from Sheppy. Jane was always good for just being creative with set plays, set pieces, being quite tricky, like just again that detailing. She would come up with some really detailed things that made, when it mattered, resulted in goals or defending goals. She just was quite clever about how she put out a team, which was, again, made me always think about more detailing behind it. And these are just, some of the best bits that I've probably picked from different coaches.
Is that Jen
I'm trying to
Wilson,
have.
former Scotland coach?
Yeah, sorry, Jane Wilson. Yeah. So she's still at Canterbury and Sevenoaks. Sevenoaks, which retract that straight away. She's not been at Canterbury for the ages. Sevenoaks.
Well, my next question was going to be, who have been the best coaches that you've trained with, and what have you stolen from them? I suppose that's two good examples.
Yeah, I think I've just answered that really. They're the two that probably had, well, again, like as a youth growing up, Rona Simpson, she is probably what I modelled myself on as a coach. She was a player, imparting a lot of her knowledge as a player on the team. And I think that's probably where I've developed that. So yeah, those are probably the three coaches that have had the most impact on me as a player, but also me as a coach. And how I then go about my job.
Now, here's a slightly different one. Who have been the best coaches that you've worked with as a coach?
So I would say I'm probably not really
Hockey all
in
box.
that sort of, yeah, I was gonna say I'm probably not really in that coaching fraternity. What I did find was during lockdown, and Sheppy used to have a really good relationship with, I'm gonna get this right, Jamie Mulders. I don't know how to say his surname properly, but Jamie from Germany. And I actually engaged with a couple of his webinar type things over lockdown, and I find him really inspiring. He was always a good man to speak to, and he was always really happy to sit down and chat through things. So I probably have learned quite a bit from him. But yeah. Apart from that, I don't really know. I just like watching hockey, and I suppose the coach is relative to them. So let's look at, is it Paul Revington, GB men's coach now. So you have to admire the way the GB men's team are playing, and you have to look at that and go, right, Revs have done that. He's come in there and he's really empowered that team to go out and press and play really exciting hockey. So I suppose from a distance, I just watch hockey and you have to applaud the coaches who are putting out these really good teams. So yeah, that's probably who.
One of the most entertaining games of hockey I've seen recently in the last couple of years is probably the men's Euro hockey final that Holland England. That was both teams going man to man, absolutely thrashing it out.
Toe to toe, yeah, love it, absolutely love it. I just think that it's really interesting having been in hockey for so long now, like seeing the different waves of style of play. So, like, the man-to-man piece in the men's game is, like, now come in, and it just makes it so end-to-end and really exciting. And then the overhead piece, that's, like, changed the game as well because, you know, what's the point in pressing now when they're going to lob the ball over your whole team? So, and I'd say that's the men's game. And the women's game, it's quite interesting because it'll be interesting to see how follows that sort of men's game. Like, don't get me wrong, we can't quite throw the ball as far, but there's elements now you can start to see it now coming in into your attacking play. That defensive piece of actually just going out all it, Barcelona press style, you know, you lose the ball, don't get it. It's been interesting seeing the trends over the years, you know. Gone are the days of like a half court phase where everybody just sit in and then counter. And I think the boys are creeping. They've been in that for a while. They're now creeping back out of that, you know. So it's really interesting to see the trends in hockey and they go in cycles, you know. Every so often, something new comes out.
Last question: who are your favourite coaches? Who are your favourite coaches currently working in hockey, and who are your favourite coaches currently working in lawn bowls?
So bowls is a difficult one because I've probably not met enough people yet, and the coaching philosophy within bowls is very different to hockey. It's not quite the same role, and that's something that I'll be interested to see how that develops over the time that I'm there and what I hope to engage with the coaches in hockey. Who are my favourite coaches? I mean, I don't know is the answer to that. I mean, in a personal sense, I love Max Caldas, but only because he's a good laugh. And like, I mean, where he's due, he's a phenomenal coach. But he's also just a really personable. I think I judge coaches on actually how they come across. So as I said, Jamie Moulders, Max Caldas, these are people I've come across in my playing career, but they're just very open. Mark Hagar, I've had chats with him. You know, these are all just great people who are happy to just let you bend their ear for half an hour and chat hockey. So I think that's a very biased opinion because these are probably the people that you've engaged with, whereas there's probably loads out there that are amazing coaches. I'm going to have to come back to you on that one about who's really sort of sparked something in me in hockey. There's loads out there, and I think I just take all the gems from all loads of different coaches that I can't probably name one that's been that real game changer for me.
I'll have to get you back on the show at some point.
Yeah.
Karina Kaz-Cuthbert of Scottish Bowls and Western Wildcats Hockey Club. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's always been good to chat.
This has been a Half Court Press production by Teo McLeod. If you have enjoyed this show, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Facebook.